Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Litton. I am the host of Spotlight on Youth, the radio show dedicated to social and legal trends impacting the rights and well-being of children across the country. Spotlight on Youth is a project of the Children's Law Center, Inc., a not-for-profit children's rights legal services organization. The show is being streamed live over the Internet and will be available on demand after its conclusion. We encourage you to participate by asking our guests questions live on air by dialing 347-994-1149. That's 347-994-1149. And to indicate you have a question, you're going to press the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and you'll be placed in the queue. Also, feel free to log into the chat room and pose a question there. On this show, we're featuring the organization Scenarios USA. Youth leadership and engagement are critical to a child's achievement, but also imperative to the overall progress and prosperity of communities. Scenarios USA is built on the belief that by valuing youth, listening to their opinions, and strengthening their critical thinking skills, we can have an impact on promoting healthy relationships and empowering a generation of engaged citizens. By using writing and film, the national nonprofit has been at the forefront of assisting youth from marginalized communities in telling their own narratives. The Scenarios USA Real Deal educational programs include a Common Core state standards-based curricula where teachers engage students grades 6 through 12 through project-based units that help kids identify and analyze their social norms. At the end of the course, students create their own stories. Some of these stories have addressed issues such as body image, dating and domestic violence, bullying, HIV testing and education, teen parenting, sexual orientation, and drug addiction. Thousands of students who go through the curriculum submit stories to the Real Deal contest. Stories are then chosen by a selection committee, and the young writers are partnered with acclaimed Hollywood filmmakers to transform the stories into short films for national distribution. Those films are then used in the next curricula, creating impactful dialogue and inspiring youth-led social media advocacy campaigns. Mirrored after an effort in Africa, this unique program was initiated in 1999 in just 2 classrooms. Today, Scenarios USA has lesson plans in all 50 states, and the Real Deal films are seen by an estimated 15 to 20 million people per year. The films have won numerous awards, including Emmys, and have been shown at film festivals and on network and cable television. With us are 3 guests, all connected to Scenarios USA. We have Maura Minsky, who is the co-founder and executive director of this amazing organization. Richard York, Richard York, who is a former Cleveland, Ohio Municipal School District teacher, where he incorporated the Scenarios USA curriculum into his classroom.
Hello.
And also joining us is Erlena Kemp. She wrote the winning story, Man-Child, as an assignment in Rick's English class in response to the question, what's the real deal about masculinity? The film garnered attention and appeared on many stations, including Showtime, and screened at some film festivals.
Hello.
Hi. So welcome, everybody. I've been an admirer of Scenarios USA for years. I'm just in awe of the kids' ability to speak to complex issues. And this past year, I was able to attend a training for educators in Cleveland on the most recent curriculum about Real Deal, about place and power. And I liked how much creativity a teacher can also bring to this process. So needless to say, very excited about having all of you here. Maura, as a former film and television producer, where did the idea for Scenarios USA originate, and why did you decide to develop it?
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for inviting us on the show. So, as you mentioned, my background is in film and television, so I spent a number of my years after college working in Hollywood and then coming to New York and working at ABC News. And I found what I was doing is I was charged with creating shows that felt really exclusive to me, and I was on the inside, and I felt like they weren't accurately representing people as they truly live their lives. So when a friend of mine who was working in Africa came back and gave me a VHS at the time of films that were written by young people and produced with Hollywood directors on issues around HIV/AIDS, my hair was blown back. And she and I looked at each other and we said, we have to replicate this. And we got permission to do that. And that's when we started the program.
terrific. And I mentioned that the program uses Common Core state standards and integrates writing film and fosters youth leadership and engagement. But briefly tell me how the program works.
Sure. So the way that the program works is that we're in a cycle, and we start off by creating a curriculum based around a question. So the question Erlena answered for her curriculum was, or her story was, what's the real deal about masculinity? So we have that question. A curriculum is built around that question in which students are looking at their own lives and the context of their lives and incorporating that into classroom work. And so the teacher, and Rick can tell you this more specifically, the curriculum then gets implemented in the classroom, and students spend an entire semester thinking and discussing and watching scenarios, films, and writing and reflecting on things that they know and they feel. And at the end of the semester, they take all of that thinking and learning and shifting of ideas, and they write their own response to that question. And then we get hundreds of what we look at as like points of interest, points of light that come to scenarios, and then we take that out to the community, and about 1,000 people read and rank those stories. And what's important about that is that we want the community at large to have to stand in young people's shoes and see what their world looks like from their perspective. And then from there, a few of the stories are chosen, one from each region we work in. Currently, we're in New York, Cleveland, and Chicago. And then a Hollywood director gets paired with the young writers and with their community. It's really a community effort that springs from one young person's story. And then that film gets made in that community with the participation of the community, with young people on the set being mentored. And then that film then gets put out into the world in many different places. You mentioned Showtime. It's also on YouTube. It's on our website. It's in classrooms. It's at conferences. It's at film festivals. So about 20 million people see these stories. So the idea is that young people who haven't been seeing themselves accurately reflected in mainstream media now have the reins to create that, have it be seen by an audience they didn't know they could have, and then have that material then inform the next curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those videos and the film are amazing. As someone who presents a lot, I mean, they're great to have access to incorporate in presentations too. So Rick and Erlena, I don't want to leave you out of this discussion. How did you become aware and involved in the Real Deal program? Rick, perhaps you can start us off with, as a teacher's perspective.
Well, I got involved based on one of our district partners within our Cleveland Metropolitan School District, which was a grant base at the time up through our curriculum department called Responsible Sexual Behavior. And I was invited to a couple of meetings because they were bringing in this new organization, which we learned was Scenarios USA. And there was a bunch of different partners, and they asked a couple of teachers to come and give some feedback and listen to the pitch of this new partnership. So when Scenarios first entered Cleveland, I was on that first group of folks, and they were talking about the videos. They showed one video which had just aired on BET from a national contest, and I was just very, very moved by it. The young lady's story and the poem that she had wrote towards the end. And then when they shared what the new topic was going to be, which was masculinity, I got particularly excited about it because I thought it was a topic that my boys would connect with, but my girls really needed to have support with as well. And so when the partnership got off the ground, you know, I took it to my classes, told everybody they would be doing it, and and that how we were going to do it, how we were going to roll it out, and tried to create as safe of an environment, because it's a very provocative topic, and some ownership has to be given to the students, and so that's how I brought it into the classroom.
And Elena, you were in one of those classes, so maybe you can share how, you know, what was your first impression? You, what did you think of this new thing that you know, your teacher was presenting?
Yeah, I remember when it was first presented, and the film, the short that he brought up that was on BET, it was called Reflections, and I think that won in 2006. And that was the film that kind of grabbed me, because I remember seeing it on TV previously, but it was just flipping through channels, and so I was finally in a position to watch the full, you know, the full short. And I remember the story was just so powerful, and I'm like, wow, this is coming, you know, this is coming from a young person. This is coming from their perspective and their her own voice. Her name was Kiana Ray. She's actually an awesome lady. And I think the second short that we saw was called The Choices We Make, and that was, like, the tipping point for me, because, once again, it was so authentic, and you could tell that it came from a young person and their experiences, or at least experiences from their friends. And I do remember it being presented, and I'm not even for sure if I really wanted to do it. I just had to do it because it was an assignment. And and getting in touch.
Force of personality, Rick.
And learning about masculinity, I didn't know that Mr. York, he was pretty much preparing us for it for a while with the literature that we had to read in his class. And he was kind of preparing all of us for this whole topic, basically, since, I say, freshman year, because it was just a lot of lessons that he as a teacher taught us that we had to take heed to. And I think it helped a lot of us open our minds, and it wasn't just for a contest. It was for really learning how to grow.
And, you know, for our listeners who don't know anything about the Cleveland school system, I don't know, Rick, if you want to describe it a little bit to give some context to where, you know, who was in your classroom. And
well, my particular school at the time was Martin Luther King High School for Law and Public Service. Now it's Martin Luther King High School for Law and Municipal Careers, and then it changed. And so our school district is often under some degree of change. Our children are part of, or our school district is located in what was deemed the poorest county in the country by the U.S. Census a while back in the last census. Our students at my school were 99% African American, 100% free and reduced lunch, but a very small school, a career-focused school, and that's the uniqueness of that particular school. But we have, or had at the time, approximately 47,000 students at that time. We are a shrinking district, but we're resurging with our new Cleveland plan and everything. But at the time, we were a district, a typical urban district with a lot of different issues. And the Scenarios USA contest allowed for my students to have a provocative topic that, and then gave me the adaptability as a classroom teacher. And I tried to share it with everyone who I came in contact with, although that would increase my students' competition. But, you know, the end result was more young people learning. And I was pretty confident that one of my kids would win, coming right out the gate. And, you know, someone reminded me of that.
I see where the competition came from.
Yeah, there's a competition spirit. But that's our district, and we really embraced it at our school. I think we had over 100 entries that year. It was really, really a fine opportunity.
Mara, I know
yeah,
you. I read that you went to Kenyon, and I don't know if that's why you have a particular interest in Ohio, but I thought maybe you could talk just a little bit about some of the other main cities that you focus on, and then Arlena will turn to you and about your personal experience in this.
Yeah, so the other, when we started Scenarios, we started in two classrooms, one in New York City and one in the Rio Grande Valley, which is on the border of Texas and Mexico. So the idea was that we wanted to ask the same question to high school age students in two very different parts of the country to see what responses we were going to get. And what was really interesting is that what came back from the stories, what we learned that first year, is that teenagers are mostly all going through very similar issues in terms of their hearts and their minds and the transition that happens in adolescence, the overlay that made the stories different. So there's a universality among young people, but what made those stories different was where they were from, so culturally, their perspective that their stories were springing from, and then also their own perspective and their own life experiences. So there was a root from each one of these stories that were the same. And so we tend to go to regions which we find that have some key overlays. One is that there are a lot of young people who are underrepresented and are in districts, as Rick said, that are have less than. So we're bringing free resources. We raise money to bring free resources to those communities to be able to do the Scenarios program. So we're in New York City, Cleveland. It had no connection with Kenyon, though. That was a really nice just happenstance. We're currently in Chicago. We've been, as I mentioned, on the border of Texas and Mexico and also in Miami. And Rick kind of touched on, we've also done some national partnerships. So one of those was with BET at the 25th anniversary of HIV/AIDS, so bringing this program national.
Arlena, I think I read you were 16 at the time you wrote Man-Child, and it centers on the character of Tommy, who is responsible in many ways for his younger three sisters and makes choices to fill that responsibility that can jeopardize his own health and well-being. And it really shows the complexity of life for many young people and their struggle to make decisions out of loyalty, responsibility, and sort of bowing to the pressures of, and perceptions of their peers. So how did you get the idea for the story for Man-Child?
I remember looking through some old journals, actually, when I started pre-writing, and it was actually, there were brochures from the organization that had prompts, and I remember specifically there were two of them that I think, as I was looking back on my journals, I think that's kind of where the character came from, but I just didn't know at the time. The one of the prompts were, I knew I wasn't a kid anymore when, and the other was my idea of manhood. Now, as I was going through it, I think I connected both of those into being a provider of some sort. So thus, for some reason, I connected Tommy to his sisters, which was kind of strange when I think about it because I didn't have any siblings growing up. So I didn't know how I connected a man, a young person with his sisters. But as I was talking to my grandmother, and she was like, that's what your grandfather did for his sisters. My granddad, he was from Louisiana, and once each of his sisters graduated, he brought each of them up here to Ohio. And so I found that interesting as I was going through it. And another thing as far as just being a provider, it wasn't just financially, it was emotionally. And I can remember it was a scene in the film when Tommy, he helped one of his sisters buy a bra. And I can remember people saying, this is so progressive, like a young man is willing to do this. And at first it didn't click because I've seen men do this. My dad, he actually took me to go buy pads for the first time. So it wasn't I guess growing up, I didn't have, like, that stereotypical male, like, oh, I'm so hard, and, like, I didn't have that. So the fact that I wrote Tommy to be vulnerable, but I wrote him to also have those stigmas that society does place on young black males, and I find it so funny when I look back at, like, the things that I was thinking about at the time. I was only 16. I was very sheltered, so I didn't even know how I came up with some of these ideas, but the character Tommy, he was really a combination of, like, all the men in my life that provided another sense of, like, traditional masculinity. It was my dad. It was my grandfather. It was Mr. York. Like, it connected a lot of things in my life that I'm glad that was accepted once people actually saw the film and heard my ideas.
Well, and
I think
go on.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, just to echo what Erlena is saying, is that what her film did was really challenge male stereotypes. So it made people who watched her film have to think and challenge themselves. And we saw that a lot from people who watched the films or in classrooms. It really led to a really rich discussion.
Great. And, Maura, you had indicated, like, winning films are, winning scripts are filmed in their city. So, Erlena, your film was filmed here in Cleveland, and it was directed by Russ and Marshall Thurber, who people may know from Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story, and We're the Millers. And it was actually filmed. The camera person was Lee Daniel, who worked on Before Sunset, Before Sunrise, and Dazed and Confused. So what was that like, seeing your story turned into a movie?
It was really exciting. Like, at the time, I don't even think I saw Dodgeball, but I knew of the movie, and they're like, oh, this is like a big director. And so I was like excited, but I think the ending process, that was more rewarding, because I felt honored that my thoughts and my opinions mattered enough to get that type of treatment. I was just like, wow, this is a pretty big deal. I think the tipping point was probably at the Cleveland International Film Festival, when it wasn't just my family who showed up. It was leaders in the community and people that just heard about it and was like, oh, I just want to come see the film because we're happy for you. And it was amazing. That was the opportunity that I'll never forget. It was a big project of love, and I really appreciate everything that I've gained from it.
Was there anything that surprised you about the film process, like making a movie that you never knew before?
Probably just as much work that goes into it. I actually have fun going to the production office. It wasn't too far from my house, and so I go, and I just see, like, them prepping and just, like, a lot of behind-the-scenes work that I'm like, okay, this is a lot of things to do, like, even with craft service and wardrobe. This is a lot of things. But I have fun just going around talking to people and just seeing everything they were doing.
So what are some of the other stories of students that were either developed into films or not that may have impacted you personally? You know, so Maura, maybe you can start, and then Rick, you can talk from a teacher perspective what you saw in your classroom.
I'd say, so we've made 24 films, and we'll be making 3 more this year, so we're just about to pick the next Cleveland film that's going to be made. It's like, how do you pick, you know, which baby do you mention? But I would, a lot of these films have pushed, like I had said with Erlena, it's really pushed our thinking. And one that I want to mention is, there was a film that we made in South Texas about, it was called Toothpaste, and toothpaste referred to condoms. So they weren't, the young women were talking about, you know, their boyfriends and were they ready, you know, to go to that next step with them, and they couldn't say the word condom, so they used the word toothpaste for it in terms of talking in code. And so that film really pushed the envelope in terms of what kids were thinking and how kids were talking about the issues and how they were talking to one another about the issues. And it was filmed in a community where condoms were not allowed to be used or shown in a classroom or mentioned in a classroom, but the students felt like that was something that was really important to talk about. And so both on screen and off screen, there things happen. And off screen, the students went to their teachers and then to the principal and then to the school board to be able to get permission to show something that was not permitted in the school. So it was important to them. It was important to us. And so, you know, we went the distance with them to be able to have their story heard. So that was something that was transitional. I would say we also worked at Rikers Island, which is a jail in New York City, and one of our winning stories came from five boys who wrote it while they were at Rikers. There's a number of, I think there are five high schools at Rikers. So the five boys wrote their story, they submitted it, and they won. And because the young person whose story wins, we work with them to revise their story. We had to go to visit them in jail, you know, week after week to do the revisions, to show them cuts of the film, to show them casting tapes and location tapes. And then we did a screening in the jail. That was amazing. And then the lead writer, when he was released, you know, being able to work with him and just kind of seeing what that process meant to him in terms of his life on the other side, you know, and back with his family. So those have been some transitional films
great.
Of note.
Rick?
I think one of the things that was pivotal in terms of stories is in that first year, I had a somewhat of a distant view from my students' work. I worked really deliberately not to write on their papers. And so I created a feedback sheet so that they were the only one actually editing their paper. And so their voices were theirs. They didn't take my words and then add them in, because so many English teachers infuse their own words into their students' pieces. And that's another thing that I particularly like about scenarios. You don't have to be in an English classroom. You can be in any subject. You know, you can be in a health class. You can be in a math class. I don't know how it would fit real smoothly, but it could be there if the teacher
it's been done.
Really wants to do it. Yeah, I know it has been done. But, you know, so I got a chance to see a lot of my students' works, and the topic was the same for two contest seasons or years. I don't know what the best way to say that more, but
cycles.
Two cycles. Okay, that was the next word I was going to use. My group of students, the first time I had four semifinalists. And so, you know, we're collaborating and we're rooting for everybody, although we knew ultimately it would be one winner. But, you know, we're waiting on pins and needles and, you know, who's going to get to the next round. And but we still had story time where folks could share their stories if they liked. And if they didn't want to be the reader, someone else could read their story for them, so they weren't forced to share that story. And then the next year, a different round, and looking at my ninth graders and how they came to this same topic in this next cycle, but totally differently, because something else was prevailing in society at that moment, and so they were writing from a different vantage point. And then we had a semifinalist that year. So, you know, they tend to gravitate and support each other more when you create community. And that's one of the things that was really exciting, was that they moved from competition to collaboration, and that was my effort to make sure, although I'm a very competitive person, as you mentioned before, I do really push when I'm teaching that students collaborate, because competition creates a loser. And, you know, your best competition is truly with your former self. And so that's something that I've always tried to instill in my students.
Carolina, did you have anything you wanted to add on this about films you've seen since you've won? Or?
I think one that I've seen since I've won is actually was the cycle last year with for Cleveland, and I believe it was The Real Deal with Place and Power. Is that what it was, Mara?
It was Gender, Power, and Relationships.
Gender, Power, and Relationships. Yes, Speechless. I read the initial story, and because I was a part of the team that helped pick, I think, before the final round for the last winner. And I remember reading it, and I was amazed, and I was excited because I'm like, wow, this is a topic that no one talks about. This is a topic that no one discussed. And it had something to do with sexual abuse, but from a male's perspective. And it amazed me, especially who wrote it. It was I think Roxy was about 16, I believe.
Yeah,
and the
fact that's right.
The fact that, you know, in her head, she wanted to tell this story, and I always tell people that's what I felt that I really won, was the fact that I told my story, and regardless if it was able to be made into a movie or not, at the end of the night after I finished my paper, after I finished my whole story, I sat and looked and said, wow, look what I created, look what I thought about, look what I put my heart into, and that was, Speechless had to be one of my favorites in the last few years because of the fact that it was so authentic, and that's what I love about scenarios. Everything is so authentic. It comes from a young person's mind. Like, that's the beauty of it to me.
Well, that's nice to hear. Thanks. I would just want to add with the Speechless film actually has, for the first time, an online component that we're doing, and we're going to be doing this with all our films. It's called iwillesv.tumblr.com, and it's a Tumblr that young people participate in. Well, all people can participate in, but it's run by young people. Erin McKell is leading that effort, and it's about showing ways that each one of us can end sexual violence. So now students are taking it one step further. They're doing the film, and they're taking it one step further to, in this case, a social media platform. So I encourage everyone to go there and see what other young people are doing and participate.
So one thing that, I mean, I also really like is that the whole approach takes into account that kids learn in different ways and meets them at the level that they're at, you know, plus it fosters their creativity. But I remember when I went to the class as an observer, it was like, kids could submit stories in any form that they had. You know, the expectation, it's to get their thinking. It's not to judge their writing. But I want to hear from, why do you think this has been so effective? You know, why has there been such a great response to the whole thing?
I mean, I think I'll start, but I'd love to hear, Rick and Erlana, what you think. I think part of it is what Erlana touched on, was it's the authenticity. So students get to write from their experience. Oftentimes students are writing as part of an assignment or in response to a book or something that they may not be connecting to. And the idea here with scenarios was being able to connect your outside life with your school life and being able to connect your learning with your life. So how do those two pieces fit together? So I think, you know, that's part of it. So it makes it's personal. I could go on, but Rick, I think you can, or Erlana, go ahead.
I think the effectiveness is what I gained from actually going, you know, learning about writing screenplays and coming up with treatments for different things. I think as far as media, that's what I felt is more effective, because you don't see, especially if I remember when I was 16, like I didn't see people that looked like me a lot in film and in television and stories that were told from my perspective. I think that's the beauty of it. It gives you the power to have that that have that level of media that everyone can see it. The fact that I have a film on YouTube, I can't remember, I don't even know, like, how many views it has now, but I remember when it was about 100, and I was excited. Like, wow, someone sees, like, someone's looking, someone's watching. And then when I heard about it on Showtime, I was away at school, and I cried in my dorm, like, I can't watch it, but I'm so excited because someone's seeing my vision. And that's what I think, that's the effectiveness if a kid wants to submit, or if they, even if they don't have, like, the goal of winning. It's the fact, hey, I can do something like this, or my friend, hey, my friend won this, check it out. Like, and it's teaching. It's not just, oh, we're just going to look at something for entertainment. Like, every film from the time scenario started is teaching us something. And I can remember looking back on them and, like, wow, like, I'm so glad that I watched this. I learned something new. I think that's the biggest thing I find in kids who watch these films, because I sit in on classrooms sometimes and they watch the films and they sit. Sometimes they have a confused look on their faces, but once the discussion rolls around, it's like, okay, well, I want to write something now because I see that I have the power to do this. I've seen someone else do it. It's just inspiring.
So, Erlena, my colleague just came over to say your YouTube views are now 44,000.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Now that's some on-time, real airtime feedback.
That's right. It's coming to you live.
So, one of the things that I think make it particularly effective is the opportunity to have discussions about topics that students don't typically get a chance to discuss, because the curriculum, whatever school district you're in, typically is based on older information. Everything is in the past, or it's some current event that's political. It's not just a topic that allowed for a debate, you know. So our students at our school were coached to debate, were coached to speak. And then now you have a platform with this contest, you know, and a lot of people weren't going to win. The students knew that. But the possibility gave everybody an opportunity to say, what if, you know, that hopeful end in mind that if I plan really, really well, if I do something really well, it doesn't even have to be well written. I just have to have the best idea. And if I have the best idea, or somebody else thinks my idea is the best, it may not even be the best idea for my class. You know, because Erlena teased me a few years back. It's like, I didn't even get an A. The challenge was, but it wasn't about the A. It's not about the grade. It's what you learn about yourself as you engage in this topic, and not only with your peers, but with yourself, you know, because I gave them tons of journal topics that they were required to do. Because if you didn't do this in my class, you failed. Because it was that interval in terms of the number of assignments. And so you had to participate. There was no opting out. You had to participate. And so once you had to participate, you might as well have fun with it, because that was the whole objective. Have fun with it. Be daring. Be bold. Say something that might provoke without necessarily being vulgar, you know, because I allowed them to curse the first few drafts, and then we found other language to utilize because it's still a school assignment, but it allowed them to say what they wanted to say. So,
great. Well, our show typically focuses on juvenile justice-related issues, both intervention and prevention. And Mara, you mentioned that there was a group of boys, even in Rikers Jail, that worked through this. How can this model be used beyond the classroom, and how has it been used? Because we know we have kids sitting in detention centers and correctional facilities, and there's so much time in after-school programs. What are your thoughts?
Right. Yeah, there's a number of ways that the Scenarios program gets used outside of the classroom. In fact, when we started Scenarios, it was outside of a classroom initially. So, just kind of the initial trying the pilots. So I would say in detention centers, there's lots of different ways we can look at this. We have 24 films, and so oftentimes the films get purchased to be able to use in settings, and then there are discussion guides that go along with them. So I just want to put out there for anyone who is listening to this show, we are offering 20% off to a Scenarios USA film. You just have to email us at info@scenariosusa.org, and so you can get a film, and then you can use it as a starting point. In terms of the curriculum itself, if you're in one of our three cities, we will work with you to bring the curriculum into your setting to be able to use it in your classrooms. So also at info@scenariosusa.org, we can respond to that as well in terms of wanting to use the curriculum. If you're outside of our cities, you can also use the curriculum in the films in those same ways. So the curriculum is really, our current one is about place and power. It's 15 lessons, and it guides a teacher through 15 lessons of how you get students to think about their place, both their physical space, their emotional space, the place, I'm in a good place, I'm in a bad place, and then where they get their power from. And this has been a particularly powerful, to use that word, curriculum in terms of students thinking about their virtual space and also their physical spaces. So I would say that the curriculum can be used really in classrooms, out of classrooms. We've seen it be successful. You can use pieces of it. You can just use the films. I mean, the idea is that young people are seeing themselves authentically reflected, and that that gets them, as Erlena was talking about, like really thinking about, okay, so what's my story? How would I tell my story? What does that look like? It doesn't have to be said out loud. It could be written down. It could be written and then revised, and then shared. So we have to give the power over to young people who are telling their stories and then get seen and then inspire this next group of people. It's kind of like this baton that gets passed through the stories that get told.
Great. And Rick and Erlena, I don't know if you've even thought about it, but I wish someone would take this curriculum and do something like this with it, or this group would use that?
Well, from my perspective, my role is a support administrator now in our school district. I'm still with the Cleveland Metropolitan School District, and I serve in the chief academic office. And because I work with a portfolio of schools, when the contest is being offered and the curriculum is being offered, I share that with the schools that I'm reaching out to. And one of the things there is bringing it in to the younger classrooms. I was a high school teacher, and so I worked with my 9th through 12th graders. Scenarios, to my understanding, still goes down to 6th through 12th grade. And the teachers in the lower grades are often intimidated about the topics. And their kids are already having these conversations and engaging in these activities. When you start speaking of juvenile justice, many kids are being incarcerated at very young ages or doing things that used to be play, but now we have criminalized. And so when we're looking at charging children with assault because they hit somebody or having a elementary school-age child brought up on sexual charges because he kissed another child, we then have to look at, maybe we look at teaching this in a different way, because kids don't get to talk in classrooms. They sit, and even today, they still sit. Kids have to have an opportunity to have their own voice, beyond just the voice that we're talking about, a defining a voice, but a voice where they get to talk about accountable, talkable topics that are going on with the classroom and not just an errant topic about what you did here or what you did there, but taking what you did here or there and incorporating it into a meaningful topic. Because most of the topics, especially masculinity, deals with juvenile justice. So you have in Erlena's film, and she didn't mention her antagonist. I don't remember his name, but Tommy had a friend that he did something with that was stupid. You know, he broke it in her, and he didn't run. And so he wound up having to talk to, go to jail. The one person he decided to call was, and I remember this name, Mr. Doubtwit, because I didn't think that was the best name for the teacher, especially since he was supposedly modeled after me, Doubtwit. But he had someone he could talk to, you know, and he was criticized by his friends that he talked to Mr. Doubtwit, which was very similar in our real world in my building, that you talking to a teacher sort of ostracized you. But it taught kids or led way to conversations about having an advisory, you know, and taking advisory, because we need so many more people in our children's lives just than the adults they live with. And so that gives way to so many other conversations that we could have that could be meaningful, to could close gaps conversations that we just don't do. And that's one of the reasons I think it can be used as after-school programs. It can be used as extended day, because we spend a lot of time doing things, but enriching things where adults and young people get a chance to collaborate, because we need more of that. And then they're more likely to ask for your support and your guidance. So that's what I would say.
I remember it was actually one of the person that actually wrote the curriculum for scenarios. She was up here doing a workshop for some educators downtown, and I got off work because she was one of my favorite people, so I wanted to go visit her. And I met a guy. I wish I knew his name. I wish I knew the organization that he worked for, but I believe it had something to do with, youth that either were incarcerated or had, a criminal history or something like that. And I can remember him telling me that he showed Manchild to those students to let them know that there is a second chance. And I never in a million years would think that someone would connect that, like, really directly to someone going through those issues. So that was my experiences, regarding the social justice system. Me actually seeing that firsthand, hearing someone talk about that the film was, a principle to them showing their students, at least in that aspect. It wasn't just masculinity. It was about, dealing with a criminal past. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, we only have about 10 minutes left. The time is just flying. I think I'd like the audience to hear from all of you about some recommendations or considerations if they're thinking about implementing the Real Deal curriculum in any way. So it can be from the perspective as administrators, teachers, students and even more from your perspective about how scenarios is supportive of it. So,
yeah. Well, I would say in terms of implementing it, and Rick is a real model of this, is that you let the students lead and that it's a student-centered classroom. And I think that is sometimes can be difficult when you have 30 students, and how can you facilitate a classroom and have them lead around a discussion. So I think, Rick, you may be able to talk about that. So that's one point. And in terms of the support element, is that scenarios will train the teachers. So we come to your community and we train teachers in the curriculum. But then we also have webinars. And these are live on our site right now, so if you're doing the curriculum, you can go and check out the webinars to be able to get ongoing support for the work. And then we're just a phone call away, so always we're a small shop purposefully so that we can really know the communities that we're working with. I met Rick in 2007, and we're still, you know, talking today on a regular basis. So it's, you know, these are long relationships that get built through this program. We look at people who participate in the program as part of a family.
And one of the things I would say in terms of advising people, I've participated in scenarios and went to a couple of the trainings and assisted in the trainings, but be prepared. The curriculum alone does not manage itself. It still requires facilitation. And I've seen a couple of classrooms where teachers just say, well, here, we're rolling this out, and it's like, whoa, you're still responsible here. For the educating of your students. The curriculum is rich. The curriculum is based on core standards now. Before, it was based in Ohio State standards or whatever state that it was in, but it modifies, and a lot of good practices go into developing lessons. But, you know, you supplement those lessons and you supplement the reading material, because scenario at the time when I was doing it did not suggest particular writings that or reading material that you read. So you have to read and be prepared, and be prepared really well, and be prepared for what your kids may say, and then prepare your students for a more Socratic conversation. And having good questioning techniques for your kids and allowing wait time where the student actually gets to talk. And then having some tolerance for the silliness, because when you're uncomfortable and you are a student, especially a teen, you're going to say something inappropriate. But having that space to redirect, and you know, you set ground rules up front. You have to get your administrator involved so that if they walk in and see something that they're not comfortable with, they're not penalizing students, because, you know, punishing somebody isn't discipline. So you have to be very thoughtful as a school, as an organization, as a classroom teacher, about how you're going to support young people in creating voice, because it's scary for them and it's really scary for the adult population too.
But would you say, Rick, at the end of that it's worth it?
I would say it's more than worth it. I just believe that people have to be thoughtful. You know,
yeah.
It is not a magic bullet, and some people treat it that way. And that's not what it was intended to be. You know, it's intended to be a curriculum that is led by a teacher or an adult who's doing it. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I would say it's not a curriculum that you can just flip open the page and just start going, that you really, to Rick's point, need to prepare. You need to watch the films. You need to think about who's in your classroom. And I would just add that it's, you know, I use the word student-led because the idea is that the students are having the discussion and that you're helping as the teacher to guide that discussion to make sure it doesn't go in the wrong place or poor information is given, but that students are building on top of each other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I didn't mean to negate that point because in my classroom it was student-led. But a student-led classroom requires a great deal of preparation and facilitation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we're at final thoughts, and Erlina, maybe we can start with you in case you wanted to incorporate anything from this conversation. But in final thoughts, you can speak to how your part, you know, everyone, your individual participation has affected you, and anything else you'd like to tell our audience.
Okay. As far as recommendations for the students, to be honest, I can't remember if I really participated in a lot of the discussions. I say in classroom, I know that I probably talked to Mr. York about some of this stuff, but to students who are just kind of like afraid and they're like, oh, I don't really want to discuss this, I don't want to say this out loud, that's what writing is for. So never be afraid to just air that out in writing. Everything that you're learning in these curriculums is meant to open up your mind and make you think and create new ideas. So that's the beauty of writing. So if you don't want to say it out loud, just write it down. You never know. Like something could spin from it. And that's what I think with every kid that has participated in scenarios, even the ones who didn't win, it was something new that you learned about yourself. It was something that you knew that you had the ability to do, a new idea to grasp, your own concept that you came up with yourself. It's teaching you something about yourself and also about how the world works. And even if you don't like how the world works, you know, you're learning something new. It's all about learning and growing. And I think especially from the kids being in high school, that's something that it's awesome, something awesome for students to learn while they're growing into young adulthood.
Great, thank you. Rick or Maura, final thoughts?
Okay, well, my final thought is I just enjoyed it. and my kids enjoyed it. And like Erlina said, it's not for everybody to have a discussion. She was one who mainly came after school. You know, she had her discussion with me and maybe one or two other students who also didn't want to talk in class in front of 30 people but was more comfortable talking with three or four and providing that availability. And it's fun, you know, seeing your high school transform into a movie set and how they do those type of things and watching your students wear all the big headgear and be part of the wrestling team is really fun. And I would just share with people, enjoy that process. You know, we have a great theater film fest here, and we took our kids there, and they just love the process.
Great.
So.
Thank you. Maura?
I would just say it's a real honor to be on this call with Erlina and Rick because I learn every day from them, from the students and from the teachers that we work with. And like I've learned a ton from this conversation from just hearing you speak and speak so, you know, reflectively. And I just want to really thank you for being part of this, you know, from day one.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Well, I'd like to thank all three of you so much for being on. I mean, this was just truly a wonderful program, and I encourage all the listeners to go to scenariosusa.org and check out all the different components and elements that they have to offer. As you heard, Maura said there's a 20% discount on films. I would encourage you to take advantage of that. I just think there's so much tremendous a potential in reaching students and kids with this curricula. So thank you again, all of you.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
And to stay informed about upcoming shows, you can either follow us here at Blog Talk Radio or visit the Children's Law Center's website at www.childrenslawky.org, which we also have more information about scenarios there. So take care and see you next time on Spotlight on Youth. Goodbye, everybody.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.